Hello everyone, I'm Laura Kaluger, Senior Editor with Commercial Property Executive, and you're listening to a new podcast episode with FTI Consulting Specialists. Today, Managing Director Rob Raymond will discuss the robust mergers and acquisitions environment in 2021 and what experts expect in terms of M&A activity this year. Hello Rob, it's nice to be able to talk to you again.
Likewise, thanks for having me back on your podcast, I appreciate it.
So how would you describe the M&A environment in 2021 in the U.S.?
Well, while I have supported numerous clients with their corporate real estate strategy through a carve-out or integration, I wouldn't exactly consider myself an expert on mergers and acquisitions generally. That said, there's a few interesting statistics I came across with regard to 2021. Mm-hmm. Globally, it was the strongest year of M&A since records began. In the U.S. alone, target M&A surged to over $2 trillion U.S. Private equity deals doubled to hit a record of $839 billion, and M&A deals together were up by 65% year over year. So assuming that's from a trustworthy source, I think that says it all.
Of course. And how is this wave of M&A activity influencing companies' real estate decisions and needs?
Well, it's considerably different than M&A clients I supported prior to the pandemic. For one, clients are now very focused on how the drastic shift to work from home can be leveraged to gain synergies in the real estate footprint. Secondly, with the expected rise in inflation, companies are really analyzing the benefits and impacts from longer-term decisions, such as sale-leaseback of owned real estate, as well as locking in lease rates for the long term, where it makes strategic sense to do so, such as a headquarters or a global shared service center.
Commercial real estate and REIT experts say it's no surprise that M&A activity picked up, particularly after the pandemic slowed or killed M&A deals in 2020. Mm-hmm. To what extent has the strong stimulus boost from the government and central bank impacted this upturn in M&A activity last year?
The increased cash levels on company balance sheets have been a large enabler of M&A activity. And interestingly, it's impacted how companies are making decisions around sale leaseback. For example, I had a client who had an excellent opportunity to take advantage of the spike in real estate valuations this past summer, which, were crazy pretty much everywhere. However, they declined to move forward with the sale leaseback because the $25 to $30 million of assets that they would have sold, it would have increased their cash on the balance sheet with no immediate plans to deploy it. And they were worried it would make them a target for acquisition or hostile takeover. So it's kind of interesting how that has evolved.
What exactly should two companies involved in a merger or acquisition consider when it comes to their real estate?
That is a whopper of a question. There's so much to contemplate. I could take up the entire interview on the question alone.
Right.
To be succinct, myself and my colleagues at FTI like to approach this from two perspectives, the portfolio and the platform. The portfolio is about finding synergies with respect to the actual size and cost of the physical footprint. So within the flurry of financial and legal activity that occurs when you're integrating two companies, we find opportunities with respect to restructuring lease contracts, contemplating sale leaseback strategies, leveraging remote work to reduce the amount of space, which leads up to the number of buildings or even relocating to markets that are better for talent or operational reasons. The platform is all about finding synergies with the operating model that governs the physical footprint. So this is where we think about who is managing real estate and how are they doing it. Are they insourcing or outsourcing real estate and facilities management services? Who are those third-party vendors that they're using and what those contracts look like? What software is being used to administer leases, manage space, or monitor facility maintenance systems? With respect to those topics, we then look at where companies have similarities and differences. And only by working in a cross-functional team of labor, procurement, org design, and even IT experts can we even begin to chart the best course forward.
So it's a lengthy process.
Indeed, it is. Most of our merger and acquisition or integration projects can be commonly 3 to 5 months long leading up to day one.
What should companies take into account to achieve that operational synergy?
Well, the first and foremost is that in most cases, there will not be an operational synergy with respect to real estate that is achieved on day one of the combined company. In fact, there may actually be a small dis-synergy, particularly if the time to get to day one is rather short. You may have to maintain different legacy systems that I just went through. Policies and processes to manage the real estate may be different, that you can't get them combined prior to day one. There may even be legal or intellectual property reasons for needing to create a new physical separation of employees that may require you to temporarily expand space or acquire new space in order to meet those requirements. The takeaway is that you can't stop solutioning for the day one portfolio and operating platform. You have to also strategize for the future or target state, because that's where the substantial synergy can be realized when it comes to real estate.
Of course. Could you please refer a bit to the legacy headquarters? What do you usually advise your clients? Is it best to keep one or close both and then open a brand new one?
You have to forgive me. I have to give the patented response in consulting of it depends. I've definitely seen successful execution of both strategies, and either strategy will usually result in a cost synergy. What I will say is that these types of decisions are never made within the vacuum of corporate real estate. And almost always, the primary driver is, in fact, talent acquisition, retention, or access to labor pools, particularly if you're choosing to close both and relocate to a new one.
And what's the best way to address the workplace culture of each company involved in a merger or an acquisition and the combined entity? How is that reflected in the real estate?
It's actually becoming a particular concern right now, particularly with everybody working at home with COVID and the return to work. But following on what I just mentioned, it's extremely important that these considerations are not made within a vacuum, or in this case, the vacuum of workplace strategy and space planning. Change management needs to be an integrated partner in those decisions, because disparate remote work policies between the two companies, if they're not aligned in an intentional and conscious way, it can cause serious disruption, confusion, and even turnover, even more so during an M&A or an integration. Something that was of concern on a recent client is that at the target company, directors and above are assigned in closed offices. But at the acquiring company, only VPs and above are assigned in closed offices. That may seem like a trite detail, but you multiply that across 50 or 100 buildings in the scope of a large merger, and suddenly you're looking at a policy difference that has the potential to impact tens of thousands of square feet in capital costs to reconfigure those spaces can approach seven figures very quickly.
Right. And how difficult is it for the new entity to renegotiate existing leases and restructure them based on the company's newfound needs?
Generally, it isn't too difficult, assuming any new legal entities that are formed in order to facilitate that integration or transaction have been appropriately capitalized. Most commercial office landlords are comfortable with and understand the nature of M&A activity. Worst case, the landlord may require protective revisions in the lease contracts. Those might include increased security deposits, money held in escrow at the event of a default within the first 12 or 24 months of the new entity, or a letter of guarantee from a parent company if that type of corporate structure is relevant.
Could you please refer to the financial and legal ramifications and considerations of company carve-outs? How do they impact real estate decisions?
Yeah, the largest ramification I deal with are the physical separation requirements. When a company carves out a piece of its business and sells it to another company, you have to solve for the physical locations of all the employees and assets, such as servers, that are conveyed with the transaction. In some countries, like the US, generally speaking, the employees of the carved out entity can remain co-located in the same space as the legacy entity, so long as there's a contractual agreement in place. Most people might know that those agreements are called transactional service agreements, or TSAs, and they typically detail the cost per employee to provide real estate and other workplace services such as food, beverage, or IT support. However, in many European countries and Middle Eastern countries, you can't do that. They require that the employees be physically separated between the two legal entities. Even when there isn't a legal requirement to physically separate employees, you may have an operational reason, such as a conflict of interest with respect to intellectual property. When carve-outs contain a lot of these required separations, the physical impacts can be considerable. There'll be one-time costs to relocate those employees. You may even have capital expenses related to building new walls or creating separation and acquiring new space.
Should we expect this robust M&A activity to continue this year?
I will say that 75% of my client work and proposals I've been working on lately are tied to M&A activity. if that continues into next year, myself and my colleagues at FTI are very experienced and well prepared to take it on.
And is rising inflation something that companies that are planning M&As or are involved currently in M&As should worry about?
Potentially, as it relates to the subsequent rise in rent rates for commercial real estate. As we wait and see how high inflation will get and how long it will sustain, companies will have to balance the trade-off between locking in low rent rates for the longer term versus maintaining agility in their portfolios in the short term, which is often needed immediately following M&A activity.
Thank you so much, Rob, for all these insights.
Sure, you're very welcome. And again, I'm really glad to be sitting here again with you today.
Thank you all for listening, and don't forget to follow CP's podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.